WJF.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, last night, the president announced his new pick for the U.S. Supreme Court, and we're going to talk with one of the leading anti-abortion leaders in the country on this show. And as we talk with this leader, you're welcome to email us at dj@wmnf.org or call us at 813-239-9663. Well, President Trump has picked a favorite of the Republican establishment, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, for the U.S. Supreme Court. Here's a report from the Associated Press.
It is my honor and privilege to announce that I will nominate Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court.
President Trump says no one in the country is more qualified, and he expects a quick confirmation. Judge Kavanaugh vowed to remain open-minded on the issues.
I will always strive to preserve the Constitution of the United States and the American rule of law.
But outside the Supreme Court, Democrats rallied in opposition, saying Kavanaugh's nomination puts abortion rights, health care, and affirmative action on the chopping block.
Are you ready for a fight?
Democrats like Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders rallying outside the Supreme Court building, worried the conservative Judge Kavanaugh will shift the balance of the court, which has so far upheld abortion rights, voters' rights, and health care legislation. Judge Kavanaugh, who starts meeting with senators today, says he'll tell them,
I revere the Constitution. I believe that an independent judiciary is the crown jewel of our constitutional republic.
American University law professor Stephen Wormiel says if Kavanaugh is confirmed, conservatives will control the nation's highest court.
He almost certainly, I think, will be part of a majority on the court to cut back on the right to abortion, if not to actually overrule Roe. I think there will be a clear majority on the court to uphold many more state restrictions on abortion. Whether or not they overrule Roe, I think he will be a vote to cut back on affirmative action. Republicans have been waiting for this moment for decades.
Jackie Quinn, Washington.
And Kavanaugh has also taken an expansive view of executive power, and he's favored limits on investigating the president. That has Senate Democratic leader, Chuck Schumer, concerned. He was asked about that this morning on MSNBC.
Senator, do you believe that President Trump selected Judge Kavanaugh because of Judge Kavanaugh's views on presidential power and his position in that law review paper where he said that presidents should not be subject to prosecution while in office?
I certainly believe he was the judge probably of the 25. They all would repeal Roe. They all would repeal ACA. But on this issue, the Mueller issue, which came up after the vetting by these two groups, he's probably the most extreme, and it wouldn't surprise me if that was very important to Donald Trump, knowing Donald Trump, and I have no proof. Do you think he didn't inquire about this either directly or indirectly, knowing Donald Trump? What do you think?
Well, the president was given a list of potential nominees by the Federalist Society, and we're going to talk with a Federalist Society member right now who is also one of the leaders in the anti-abortion movement in the country. Catherine Glenn Foster is president and CEO of Americans United for Life. The group calls itself America's first national and current most influential pro-life organization in the country. Foster is admitted to the bar in Virginia and Washington, D.C., as well as the U.S. Supreme Court. She's a member of the American Bar Association and the Federal Bar Association and an inaugural member of the Federalist Society Founders Club. I spoke with her earlier today about the Kavanaugh nomination. Catherine Glenn Foster, welcome to WMNF. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let me ask you about the appointment last night or the nomination last night. Would Judge Kavanaugh have been your first choice?
You know, there were a number of very strong candidates on the president's shortlist. He had a tough choice, and I do believe that he chose very well among those final candidates.
Would he have been your first choice?
again, I would certainly say we didn't have a first choice. There are so many good originalist, textualist jurists on that list. And so the idea of having to choose any one of them, it would have been a very difficult thing for President Trump to decide. He consulted with many advisors and certainly examined very closely their legal writings, their legal opinions, and their bios. And I believe that he made the best choice according to what he had seen.
How confident are you that he's going to vote to overturn Roe?
You know, that is a difficult question, because when you're talking about future cases that may come up before the Supreme Court or any court, you know, you can't predict in that way, because there is so much that that comes into play. You know, you're looking at the facts of the case, you're looking at the specific law at issue, and so it's difficult for any judge to say, and it's not appropriate in a confirmation process for any judge to try to prognosticate how they would rule on a future court in a future case if they are elevated to the Supreme Court. We do know that in that Garza case that recently came before the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, that Judge Kavanaugh did support the Trump administration's position that undocumented immigrant minors in federal custody do not have a right to a government-facilitated abortion. And in that opinion, he cited the government's interest in favoring fetal life and refraining from facilitating abortion. So while following precedent, he nonetheless made that view clear. And particularly when you look at the fact that both the left and the right view Roe v. Wade, Casey, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, as really among the worst examples of judicial activism in our nation's history, that both the left and the right consider that they are extreme, that they went too far too fast, that they were poorly reasoned, it's not surprising that he would rule that way.
Some on the left, but not everybody on the left. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No problem. That's true, but legal scholars on the left pretty universally recognize that that Roe and Casey were in fact poorly reasoned. When you have Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and when she is saying that Roe is the most extreme law in our country, when she's saying that it went too far too fast and criticizing the reasoning of Roe, that's a pretty powerful endorsement that, in fact, it was not grounded in the Constitution.
You're an inaugural member of the Federalist Society, Founders Club. Does the Federalist Society want Roe overturned?
You know, I don't speak for the Federalist Society, but I do know that the Federalist Society is deeply committed to the rule of law, to the original meaning of the Constitution, to the text of statutes as written, and just looking at those elements, it's pretty self-evident that Roe should be overturned.
And as the president and CEO of Americans United for Life, you want Roe overturned, right?
Yes, as CEO of Americans United for Life, I certainly want Roe overturned.
And have you endorsed Kavanaugh at this point?
We have not endorsed anyone in particular, no.
Okay. Abortion didn't become illegal in this country until the 1860s, and the original founders of the Constitution were writing the Constitution in an era where quickening was the decision about whether or not the time of quickening was the time at which an abortion would not be performed or could not be performed. But before that, before quickening, abortions could be performed in the U.S. So is the original intent quickening in your mind?
No. You know, when we are looking at the developments of science and how science and medical technology have progressed over the decades, over the centuries, it's incredible what we've seen. And that goes to one of those elements of stare decisis when you're looking at how the facts on the ground have changed. And we've seen that the age of viability has been pushed back by weeks. We're seeing that that people are actually able to see their child in the womb. And the idea that such a subjective thing as quickening, or when a pregnant woman is able to feel that unborn child moving within her would be the sort of standard by which we're judging these things, it now seems almost ludicrous when we have so much advanced technology, when we have ultrasound technology, when we know when the fetal heart starts beating, for example. We've just seen so much, so many advances, so much medical and scientific progression along those lines.
But isn't that a modern interpretation, and that wasn't available to the founders or the original drafters of the Constitution? The original drafters adhered to this idea of quickening. So if we go back to the original intent, it would be when the baby starts to kick. It's only at that point that abortion would be frowned upon in the 1780s.
You know, again, it depends on the society. It depends on a number of different factors. But certainly the founders did have some respect for unborn life as they saw it. And as our understanding of unborn life has progressed over the decades, over the centuries, we've learned that, in fact, there is a living human being earlier than perhaps the founders knew.
But there were no laws against abortion. The founders didn't put abortion in the Constitution. And what you're suggesting is that you don't support the original intent, right? In this case, you want to look at what science has discovered in the last few years.
Well, that's turning to science. But when we are looking to the Constitution, what Roe did is turn to the Constitution and look to the Constitution and sort of finding a right to privacy that that really isn't grounded in constitutional text. So Roe sort of invented this right out of nowhere, and that's how we got Roe. Casey in 92, that came about because even though in Casey, the justices didn't believe that the specific holdings of Roe, that grounding it in the privacy interest was still necessarily viable. But nonetheless, they said, well, at this point, following the principles of stare decisis, women now rely upon abortion in order to arrange our education, our careers, our families, our futures. And therefore, we can't overturn Roe because at this point, women have come to rely upon it.
But that wasn't the original intent. There were no laws in 1780 that outlawed abortion in the U.S. The original intent of the Constitution and the people who wrote the Constitution at the time didn't really envision outlawing abortion before quickening. And even those laws didn't come until the 1860s.
You know, again, I would say that the people at the time of the founding of the country had a deep respect for human life. And they didn't always express that perfectly, and that's how we ended up with slavery, even after the Constitution was written, and that and so many horrible practices. But we have recognized that that the Constitution does provide a right to life, but for all human beings. And as we've increasingly recognized that, in fact, unborn children are human beings, and we're able to see with modern technology and modern science exactly how they are growing. We've been able to more and more identify that that they do deserve equal protection.
Would you like to see women prosecuted for murder, women who have abortions, or doctors who perform abortion prosecuted for murder?
I would not at any point consider prosecuting women for murder. And that isn't something that anyone's talking about realistically. As someone who has personally had an abortion, I know what women who are considering that are going through. I know that they are often facing pressure, coercion from partners, from family members, from society, from schools and places of work and just our culture. No one is really discussing that as an option.
What about the doctors?
When it comes to doctors, you know, we have seen, for example, Kermit Gosnell from Philadelphia, and he has been he's been prosecuted for murder and manslaughter. Yeah, I think it would probably depend on the circumstances, but that's something that the law should be and lawmakers should be identifying. You know, what the punishment should potentially be for someone within a certain legal regime within each state.
Would you like to see all doctors who perform abortions prosecuted for murder, as that doctor in Philadelphia has been?
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I mean, there are so many different factors that go into it, and again, you know, there are many doctors who may not understand exactly what they're doing. They understand the mechanics of it, but they may not have come to that understanding. And so at that point, you know, many of them have, in fact, changed their minds. We've seen a number of conversions. Bernard Nathanson, one of the most well-known of them, but a number of other conversions as well, where different doctors, physicians, nurses, other staff members of abortion facilities will, in fact, change their minds and become pro-life.
But you believe abortion is murder?
Murder is a legal conclusion. So, you know, that's not something I could speak to.
You're an attorney.
That would depend on the statutes in each state.
You're an attorney.
Right, but that depends on state law and the statutes in each state. And again, it's a legal conclusion.
But if a fetus is a human being, is a person, and the person is being killed during the abortion, then are you saying you don't believe it's murder?
I'm saying that there are many different statutes that deal with homicide and the death of individuals. There are murder statutes, there are manslaughter statutes, there are extenuating circumstances, and it would be different in every state, in every jurisdiction.
And if the intent is to abort the baby, would that be murder?
Again, it would depend on the jurisdiction.
All right. So I want to ask you about Americans for Life. What's the mission and the purpose of AUL?
We work through the law to ensure that everyone is welcomed in life and protected in law. We work through legislatures and in the courts and in the culture.
Do you endorse candidates? Do you work for candidates?
We do not work for candidates. We have at times spoken favorably of candidates, certainly. Absolutely.
And if the mission is life, how do you define life?
We would define life, again, as any human being from conception to natural death.
Every human being. Does that include people overseas, too?
Yes.
All right. So here's the question I have. Why is it that pro-life politicians are in favor of things like the Iraq invasion, in which about a million people were killed, cuts in food stamps, torture, denial of expansion of health insurance to more Americans, including kids? Most pro-life politicians favor separating refugee children from their parents. They're in favor of selling cluster bombs to Saudi Arabia. They want easy access to semi-automatic weapons. Has your group spoken out against any of those, all affecting people who are living?
We do speak out at times about many of those issues. I don't think it's fair to say that every pro-life politician is in favor of all those things. I believe that the politicians on both sides of the aisle, and there are pro-life politicians on both sides of the aisle, can at times fail in a consistent life ethic, where you'll see certain politicians endorsing drone attacks. You see certain politicians, you know, their stances on health care, on different wars, et cetera. And for those who follow a consistent life ethic, then that would follow through, that the respect and support for life would follow through all of those. Now, each individual group doesn't always speak on every single issue. There's limited bandwidth. And so you know, everyone speaks on what is perhaps most closely associated with them. Perhaps they have a personal history with it. Others may speak to the area that they view as the biggest crisis of the time. But certainly I've spoken out on anything from Charlottesville to school shootings to a number of other issues.
There was a liberal Democrat years ago from Dayton, Ohio, who was in Congress, who was pretty consistent on all those issues. He's no longer in the Congress. But can you tell me about a member of Congress today who's pro-life, who opposed the Iraq invasion, or who opposes cuts to food stamps, or who opposes or who's in favor of expanding health insurance, who opposed selling cluster bombs to Saudi Arabia, or who, is there anybody that you can point to who's pro-life who says they want to make it harder to have easy access to semi-automatic weapons?
Again, I think what we're doing is trying to go too far into the individual, and I wouldn't want to speak for any particular individual because there are so many different factors that go into a congressional vote, and we have both seen that on both sides affect us positively and negatively, where, you know, sometimes they'll have to shift a little or shift stances somewhat. It isn't a simple up or down vote all the time, and that can be unfortunate because that means that we don't always see exactly that people are able to vote their conscience.
Well, one last question on the same topic, and that is, you know, some people say that right to life groups only care about the being until they're born, and then after they're born, they don't really care. They want cuts to food stamps. They're in favor of most of the wars that the U.S. gets involved in. They're in favor of gun rights. This current problem of separating refugee children from their parents, they're not speaking out about. They certainly are opposed to expansion of health insurance. They're okay with cutting food stamps to hungry people. That the pro-life people only care about life up to birth.
Again, I would say that's simply wrong, and it's a stereotype.
Can you name one politician who bucks that trend, though? It says, I'm opposed to abortion.
What we're talking about is pro-life groups, not politicians. Again,
okay.
When it comes to politicians, it can be more difficult for them to vote their conscience.
Okay.
In terms of pro-life groups, one
pro-life group that was at the forefront of opposing the Iraq invasion, is at the forefront of cutting food stamp rations, is in the forefront of opposing torture, is opposed to
that
selling...
That would be easy. That
okay,
would be any of the pro-life groups that follow the consistent life ethic. I would point to any number of them, particularly some of the newer groups that have developed, but also Democrats for Life, for example. A lot of the subgroups have specifically spoken out on that. When you have a larger group that is solely focused on abortion or a more traditional issue, then sometimes it is something that is tougher to speak out on in either direction, no matter how no matter what the personal convictions of those who are leading the group. So often what will happen is, you know, we may speak out on our personal pages or something like that. But there are a number of the groups and especially smaller groups from our subgroups, but certainly including Democrats for Life or Rehumanize International, a number of different groups that feminists for Life that speak out on the wide range of consistent life ethic issues. And strongly support healthcare, you know, fight back against gun access and war and things like that, and are strongly in favor of gun control and against drone fighting and against our treatment of refugees.
Hey, Catherine, your group, though, doesn't speak out about these things, though, does it?
No, we do at times, absolutely.
And which one have you spoken out against?
Again, I've spoken out against white supremacy, against, gun violence, a number of these issues. Again, I speak on healthcare pretty frequently. again, a number of these issues. I've spoken on warfare, drones.
Yeah, drones are pretty terrible. Catherine, where do we go from here? Will you be showing up at the hearings? Will you be? When will you make up your mind? When will Americans United for Life make up their minds about whether or not they'll support the Kavanaugh nomination?
Well, at this point, we are supporting the nomination. We haven't specifically endorsed him, but we are supporting that nomination because based on all of that we have seen, all of the research that we've done, the opinions by Judge Kavanaugh that we have read, we have seen that he is an originalist and a textualist jurist who's going to look to the U.S. Constitution and to the rule of law in guiding his decisions. And as Justice Scalia said, a true originalist, a textualist, is not going to like every decision that they come to. They're going to, at times, find that their ruling may conflict with their own personal policy preferences. But that's what it takes in order to hew that closely to the Constitution.
Catherine Glenn Foster, thanks for spending the time with us. Is there anything else that you want to add?
I would just say that that again, Judge Kavanaugh is a strong candidate. He's a strong nominee, and he's a former law clerk to Justice Kennedy. We know that that he does follow in Justice Kennedy's footsteps in many ways, and he's the author of nearly 300 opinions that we can look through and examine as we look to his record. And so, I think the entire country is looking forward to doing that.
Well, Catherine Glenn Foster, President and CEO of Americans United for Life, thanks for coming on WMNF.
Thanks so much.
That was Catherine Glenn Foster, who's an attorney. She's the president and CEO of Americans United for Life. She's a member of the American Bar Association and an inaugural member of the Federalist Society Founders Club. All right, so my question to you is, did she answer the questions? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. We were talking about the Kavanaugh nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court announced last night by the president. She suggested that the Roe decision that guaranteed access to safe and legal abortions was an invented right to privacy. And she couldn't name a politician, a current pro-life politician, who was opposed to wars, torture, separation of families, cuts to food stamps, etc. The former congressman that I mentioned was Tony Hall, a Democrat from Dayton, who was anti-war and anti-abortion. So let's see what you think. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. And what do you think? Let's go to John in Palmetto. John, thanks for calling in. What's your take on she had to say?
Thanks, Rob. I love it. You stole a lot of my fire there because I will say that no, she did not answer those questions. Back in the late 90s, I wrote a thing called Politically Correcting Choice where pretty much I asked that question a lot about why they don't respond to different wars. And ever since then, especially the Iraq War, and remember we had a couple of wedding parties where we blew away the wedding parties? You never heard one peep out of anybody about those children and all those innocent people, and you could go on and on and on with that subject. So thanks for asking that question. So I'll just jump to, as I did in the piece back then, it all goes back to a guy named, Randall Terry from Operation Rescue?
Yep, yep.
Him, and then after him came a guy named Andrew Pudster, who they both were both had probably 50 or 60 together arrests. You know, they were doing what the Republicans criticized so much. They were getting arrested for it. And it was Andrew I forget what it was, but he used to run every morning. What I wrote extensively on was he came up with the idea of what happens because they weren't concerned about the kid. They were more concerned like keeping the money in the family, how, you know, inheritance. And that's where it all stems back to. He got behind Terry. He and Terry pushed it because he came up with the idea, if somebody's impregnated and then they die, does the kid get the money? You know, and that's where that seed got planted, and it stemmed off from that. And since then, even since then, the Republicans have shown no interest in the killing of innocent life. They use that. They'll run to it. They'll blow apart a wedding party of 40, but and not blink an eye, but they'll run after somebody who put something in a clinic behind a dumpster just to see if they could get out and show it. And thanks a lot for having that woman on there, because she was a total, you know, she lied. She you could tell she was making up as she went, and you nailed it. You nailed it.
So, all right. Thanks John, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. All right, so my question is, as we were listening to the interview with Mrs. Foster, did she answer the questions? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. David writes this. He says, I was surprised that Trump gave the rose to Kavanaugh last night because I thought Amy Coney Barrett would be the pick. I think that Trump would have been viewed as slightly more progressive for picking a woman. So it was kind of a lost opportunity, writes David. And then John writes this, too bad we don't get to talk to your guest today. I did invite her on to the 11 o'clock portion of the show. She said she couldn't do it at 11 a.m., so we could only pre-tape the conversation this morning at 9. John writes, it might be interesting to know if she is against the death penalty or whether she believes this administration should be caging the children of people who came here pleading for asylum. That's John's email. Elio writes this. He says, perhaps you can ask your guests where in the Constitution it discusses abortion, since she's using the Constitution as her reasoning. Yeah, we did touch on that a couple of questions. Elio, thanks a lot for that. DeRussia writes this. It's unbelievable that there is a fight to continue the right to make a decision to kill a baby in birth. Seems to me that all the time and energy spent supporting the elimination of a life could be spent educating and promoting safe sex and living a more responsible lifestyle. Just unbelievable that law comes into play for something that should be common sense, writes DeRussia. I think there are people that are fighting to have sex education in the schools, and I think it's those pro-life politicians who are undoing sex education where it's being undone. I think that's pretty much a fact. Let's go back to the phones and take some phone calls. We're going to go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, what do you think?
Well, first of all, she was evasive, didn't answer most of your questions clearly, and some of her answers don't comport with the facts. But in the abortion debate, I just would like to be allowed to state what it's really all about when someone wants to outlaw, block, make it hard for a woman to use abortion to terminate pregnancy. What you are saying, if you want to outlaw abortion and make women carry...
Hey, Gary, we played a long soundbite from you the other day in which you made this point. Do you have a new point? Because I think, you know, you have stated that pretty clearly, that pregnancy is not easy. And we heard you the other day, but do you have a new point to make about this interview?
Yeah,
I did, of course.
I think that is the core of these people who are using the power of government and sponsored Supreme Court picks, claiming, using the words pro-life, and basically doing brutality against women, being evasive and dishonest about what their real agenda is. And, you know, your interview was very revealing. And I'm glad that you did play the clip. If you want to force a woman to gestate and deliver a baby, you're doing great harm to her that you would not want done to yourself.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot. Thanks
for
the call. 813-239-9663. You know, we've got all men on the phone, and I'm one of those people that think that we should have more gender diversity. I think all of us think that here at WMNF. So if you're a woman, please call us up, 813-239-9663. Here's a message from a text message from 352. It's anonymous. And anonymous writes, "Not everyone is as dumb as Democrats," writes 352. So 352, thank you for that. And Bill in St. Pete says, "If this is the best Federalist can offer is evasion, backing and filling, and selective reliance on modern science for some discarding originalism, then denying modern interpretation of other parts of the Constitution, the framers understood flint hooks would become assault rifles and well-regulated militia was a throw phase. This having it both ways shouldn't be persuasive." I did think it was interesting because I asked her about abortion at the time of the writing of the Constitution. At the time of the writing of the Constitution, abortion was legal in the U.S. Women could have an abortion until the quickening of the baby. That is when the baby starts to kick. But up until that point, people could have abortions. There were no laws in this country outlawing abortion until 1860. So I tried to ask her and tried to understand why, if she is a believer in original intent, why not go back to the original understanding of abortion from the 1780s? But I never was really able to get her to say that she wanted original intent as abortion was understood in the 1780s. She kept saying that we've learned so much from science and medicine since then that we should apply that. But that is not original intent. All right, so what do you think? 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Robert in Tampa. Robert, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, good afternoon. I was listening to the questioning, and, I kind of thought you were getting off the track in a way. She was a little evasive, but my point is I'm not a diehard pro-lifer. I can see both sides. But I think, you know, a pro-lifer, this is a, you know, someone who, you know, a baby that can grow up to be you or I, and they don't have a choice. And I understand that, and I think that's the whole crux. It's sincere. They feel strongly about it, and I do see the point. And, you know, when you talk, you were trying to kind of catch her in a, you know, contradiction, whether she supports bombing and all that. But, you know, I see that on the other side, too. You know, people, they're so hardcore for abortion rights, you know, And yet, you know, we care very little about, you know, but yet, you know, we don't think nothing about taking the life of an unborn baby. It has a heartbeat, but yet we care about torturing terrorists and we care about, you know, there's a contradiction there, too. And then I just, you know, there's two sides to this. This is a really touchy issue.
And Robert, how do you, Robert, let me ask you,
turn Roe versus Wade.
Robert, how should we treat people? How should we treat people who are alive when it comes to food stamps or when it comes to killing civilians in war? How should we treat people who are alive? You know, if you think of it, there's I think 6 billion people who are alive right now. And there's a lot of questions about war, about drones, about chemical weapons. There's a lot of questions about food stamps in this country. There's questions about torture that apply to millions and millions of people who are already alive. How should we treat those people?
Wow, we have better birth control now than we ever did.
Okay, should we have some protection from people who are alive too? I mean, I understand the feeling that you want to protect the unborn. I understand, why she says that. But it also seems to indicate that while you're protecting the unborn, you've become indifferent to the health of everyone else, the 6 billion people who are living. Are you indifferent to the 6 billion people?
No, I'm not. I care a lot about people, but you're assuming that everyone's going to get food stamps.
Food stamps is part of it. If you're hungry.
So, but I'm saying not everyone that's born is going to get food stamps. There should be very
well, but there's war and there's there's a lot of things that affect people that pro-life senators and congressmen never speak out about. In fact, they go in the opposite direction.
I lost family members in the 9/11 attack. People shouldn't be treated.
People should not be treated horribly.
Wild world today.
Okay, well, Robert, we're trying to make it less wild. All right, Robert, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. And let's go to Max in Tampa. Max, you're on. What would you like to say?
I just want to say I called you a couple weeks ago. I was a little upset with the way you handled your interview with David Straz. I wanted you to, put his feet to the fire a little more. And I feel like, in this interview, you did a great job, and I'm very proud of you. That this is the reason I love WMN.
All right, Max, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. All right, thanks for saying that, too. And let's go to Brian in Tampa. Brian, you're on. What would you like to say?
I think it's interesting, too, that you said, you know, only males are calling in. I haven't heard from any other women except the attorney.
Yeah.
And based on all the information discussed and the tough questions, she answered the question, I thought, accurately and with composure as an attorney. There was a lot of different things going on there. A lot of different, you know, hardcore constitution and laws and history. This is a stark contrast to the religious whack jobs that stand around outside the abortion clinics over on Fletcher Avenue here in Tampa. You know, you ask them, you know, why can't they address all the pedophiles and child abusers rampant in the Florida churches? They get evasive about that. But that's a stark contrast from that attorney, though. I think she answered the questions well.
All right, Brian, thank you. Thank you for your comment. Oh, what happened to him? And then Farrah writes this, these anti-choicers are not pro-life, they're anti-women, because they value a fetus over a woman's dignity and self-determination. They see women only as vessels or incubators. The real issue is forcing more births of white babies and getting the votes of religious conservatives who fear losing power. They don't care about anything but advancing that agenda, writes Farrah. Farrah, thank you for that. 813-239-9663. Just getting your take on that interview that was just completed with the head of Americans United for Life. And let's go to Tina in Tampa. Tina, thanks for breaking the gender barrier at 1147. Tina, you're on.
Hi. I want to say... If they are saying that we oppose abortion because we believe in the sanctity of life, then they cannot be pro-capital punishment because, you know, the sanctity of life, all life is precious. Yet it seems to me that many of these people who are, you know, anti-abortion and anti-woman's right to choose are the first group of people screaming, death penalty, death penalty. That doesn't make any sense. But for me, the whole issue is a matter of privacy. It's nobody's business. And like one of your callers said, the framers of the Constitution at the time, abortion was legal. So if they're going to start using that argument, they've lost that one too. It's all just their personal religious belief that they're trying to impose on the rest of us. It's just my take on it.
All right, Tina, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling
in. Thank you.
All right, great to hear from you. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And Mark says, thanks for another great interview. She barely committed to answering only one question. That's Mark's email. Mark, thank you for that. I'm just wondering whether or not you thought that my guest was consistent, and did she answer the questions? And our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Rob in Lutz. Rob, you're on. What would you like to say?
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Mr. Laura. Yeah, I'm a conservative. I support President Trump's pick last night for Judge Kavanaugh. But at the same time, I'm going to pull a pin on this grenade and throw it in the door here for the following listeners. I commend you on your ability to get that woman, Mrs. Foster, as a lawyer, to squirm on the stand, as it were, because you brought up the issue of murder, and she squirmed out, and she said, well, it depends on the states and how they interpret that. Oh, come on, murder is murder, right? But at the same time, you are the watchdog. The journalism is the watchdog of politics, religion, et cetera, in human society. So I commend the entire staff there, and you especially as a fine journalist, for putting these feet to the fire. Thank you so much.
All right, Rob, thank you very much. I did try to ask her several different ways whether or not she thought abortion was murder and whether or not she thought that women and doctors should be prosecuted, and you heard her answers there. And you can go back. You can subscribe to the MNF podcast and get the Radioactivity podcast delivered to your listening device every day. And you can also go back and listen online. Go to WMNF.org and look for Radioactivity from today. And let's go to Kathleen in Tampa. Kathleen, thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Well, first, I think it was a very good interview. And I think asking the questions about how much we care about the living is very pertinent. I looked up a couple of statistics, and one is in the Guardian newspaper that in 2015, in developing countries, for instance, 1 in 10 maternal deaths are caused by unsafe abortion.
Wow.
And at that point, it was 239,000 per 239 per 100,000 women, which is an enormous amount of deaths. And I want to remind everybody that 11 people have been killed working at abortion clinics in the United States. Her suggestion that people who performed abortions were murderers, I think she came close to saying that.
She did come close, yeah.
Yeah, would rev that whole thing up. Of course, the importance, of course, is first and foremost to protect women and their privacy and their rights, but also to protect doctors who provide, in this developed country, presumably, safe abortions. And I want everybody to remember, too, that we have a president now who suggested at one point that women should be punished for supposedly killing their fetuses.
Yeah, he said that to Chris Matthews on MSNBC. Yeah.
Yes, and so I think, you know, all of this is not protecting women's lives either, obviously. And though we do have other methods of preventing pregnancy, other than even after pregnancy occurs, other than abortion in the early days, I'm sure that that's going to be next on the list if abortion rights are taken away. And so I just think that anybody in the Senate should be concerned about opposing this nominee, because anybody from the Federalist Society that was approved by the Federalist Society, as all the nominees were, is going to be opposed to Roe v. Wade.
Oh.
So just thank you for what you're doing, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Well, Kathleen, thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to take some more phone calls. And let's go to Peter in Tampa, who's been waiting for about 12 minutes. Peter, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, thank you for taking my call. Great work, great interview. A couple of things. One, while I totally understand the effort to highlight the contradictions in the pro-life view, at some level, this is a relatively simple thing to do, but it's also going to be ineffectual. You will never persuade a pro-life person to be other, you know, to take a different point of view by pointing out the contradictions in their view, because they have rationalization for every one of those contradictions. For example, the previous caller mentioned capital punishment. Right. But they'll just say, first of all, some of them are anti-death penalty. Second of all, those that aren't will say, oh, well, there's a difference between an innocent life, like a child, you know, a child, and they believe the fetus is a child. It's an important place to start. But they're going to say there's a difference between an innocent child and a person who's committed murder. And that will be their rationalization. Now, you or I might say, yeah, but what about the sanctity of life? It doesn't matter. They've got an explanation, and they'll just keep rolling with that explanation. So at some level, I just don't know where the highlighting of contradictions gets you, although I understand why one would do it. What I want to talk a little bit about is two things. One, people should remember that even if these guys were to reverse Roe, it does go to the states. And at that point, and I'm not saying that's a good situation, but we could mobilize here in Florida millions and millions of people to not only protect legal abortion, but to actually expand legal abortion and to expand the distribution of contraception, right? So sometimes when the opposition makes a step forward, it's actually an opportunity for you to use their step forward to actually beat them three or four times over in the opposite direction.
And Peter, with gerrymandering, do you think that it would be easy control Tallahassee?
Gerrymandering as well. I mean, it's fairly obvious to me, and I feel like it's fairly obvious to most people, that we need fundamental radical change to our political system. But every time these outrageous things occur, more and more people see that we have a fundamentally broken system and we need to reform it. And I think sometimes people forget that, yeah, they're taking a step forward, but for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. We can use these things to mobilize progressive people for progressive causes. You know, the other thing I'll say is everybody is so focused on abortion, they're forgetting that this guy is basically a corporate stooge. Like, every single ruling he has ever made is in favor of big moneyed interests against workers and big moneyed interests against the environment. Abortion is important, but let's not forget about the working class and workers And let's not forget about our planet and our rivers and our streams.
All right,
thank you,
Peter,
for taking my call.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. And we will talk a whole lot more about the Kavanaugh nomination as the weeks and months go on. Let's go to Sally in Land O'Lakes. Sally, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
It's been great listening to you. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
First time caller. But what I wanted to say about the anti-abortion group and movement, they really are just pro-birth because they don't care once they're born. It's very obvious how they help out mothers that are struggling, and I'm sure even some fathers too that are single parents. I do think they're more pro-birth than pro-life. But I wish we would use that terminology a little bit more. And also stress, vote, vote, vote.
All right, Sally, thanks a lot. That's the way
Thank
things
you.
Change. Thank you. And 813, Ron writes this, of course your guest did not answer the questions, and of course she loves Mr. Kavanaugh. Any strict constitutionalist wants to see a right-wing anti-choice person in the Supreme Court, writes Ron. John writes this, no, she didn't answer your question. She only talked in circles, especially when you asked her if she thought of abortion as murder. I call them right to birthers because they don't care about the kid once the kid is born, writes John. And then an angry white man in Tampa writes, I can just feel the warm, tender liberal hearts pouring out of my speakers, writes angry white man in Tampa. All right, angry white man. And let's go to Fran in Largo. Fran, welcome to the show. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Yes. Well, the way I see it is, I don't know about these right-to-life groups, but the politicians involved in all this, particularly the Trump politicians and Trump himself, see us all as commodities. I think he sees the unborn as future commodities. Just as an example, this latest thing about the baby formula, they're trying to promote that over breastfeeding for the Nestle Corporation.
Yep.
I don't think there's any heartfelt feeling for unborn children out of those people. It's all about capitalism. That is the big problem, is capitalism. And as far as I'm concerned, this world is burning right now. We have enough humans in this world. We have been a very successful species, too successful. And I'm not saying people should go out and immediately get abortions or anything, but we should start educating people about sensible birth control. There's too many people in this world. There's too much pollution. And we're losing our world. So we just have to be smart and, like the other lady said, vote. Vote and vote for who you think is the best. Okay,
Fran. Thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. Lou writes this. He's in Plant City. He says, no, she did not answer your question. I personally don't like the idea of abortion. However, it should be between the woman and her doctor, writes Lou in Plant City. And let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Jim in Pinellas. Jim, thanks for calling in. We just have a minute. What would you like to say?
Yeah, she said that they go by science findings. Well, if she truly did, she would find out that science has found that forcing a woman to have a child, to carry a fetus to term, causes stress in her body that creates different hormones that do get to the child, and they're finding out that this is affecting the child's development and his ability to deal with the world. If she truly is going for science, she has definitely left that part out. And everybody's forgetting that nature allows for spontaneous abortions throughout all of the mammal system. And it's not the individual that, well, I'll put it this way, you need the mom and dad to make the babies.
Yeah. All right, Jim, thanks a lot. Thank you for the call. Wendell writes this, no, she did not answer the questions. Your guest repeatedly mentioned that there are certain factors that determine people's stance on abortion issues. So then why can't there be factors like America's social welfare institutions, war, etc., that clearly allow for women to make a choice, writes Wendell. And then Daniel writes this. He said, isn't it amazing that a lot of pro-life advocates are also the ones to cut government assistance programs? I wonder if they would approve of sterilization programs that would remove the need to have an abortion, writes Daniel. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for your hero, Mark Biro. He's coming up next. Jan Simpson was our phone producer today, and we couldn't do this show or most of the shows on Wednesday without Jan. So, Jan Simpson, thanks a lot. Stay tuned. We're going to get the latest news. This is 88.5 FM, WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. Here's the NPR News.